LeBron and his led his Lakers to a 113-106 win over Giannis's Bucks, but beating the last head-to-head MVP didn't seem to faze one King James. LeBron, talk to me.
Is there any satisfaction in having success against Giannis? You're now 16-5. Your teams are 16-5 in your career against him, and he's 10 years younger than you, and he's the back-to-back MVP, yet you know, you're still able to find success.
Nah. I think you know me. I think all you guys know me. It's never been about individual. It's all about the team success, and that's all that matters. I can care less about that. I just try to play well and help our team win versus any opponent. That's what it's all about.
Stephen A., you buying it? What kind of message was LeBron trying to send last night?
Hell no, I'm not buying that. And I think that LeBron stood in front of the cameras last night and lied to the American public and anybody else who was listening. But I'm not knocking him for it. But I think that, listen, LeBron wouldn't be as great as he is if all he thought about was the outcome for the team.
Yeah.
There, especially in the sport of basketball, there is some individual pride that seeps into the equation where you put dudes on notice. This is who the hell I am. Don't forget. You understand? When LeBron sits up there and goes in for a layup and gets an and-one and flexes his muscle, is that about the team? When he sits up there and dunks on somebody and screams at the crowd, is that about the team? When he sits up there and throws and drills a three and puts up three fingers or turns around and, yeah, maybe when he turned around and turned his back to the shot because he wanted to bet with Dennis Schroeder, maybe that was about the team because you're having fun. But what I'm saying is, nobody's accusing him of caring about his individual accolades more than the team. No, he's proven that he's unselfish on that level, and he deserves our respect and deference in that regard. But also, when you're 36 years of age, you still averaging 24-7-7. You still a baller. Y'all a number one seed. Y'all are reigning defending champions. Y'all are prohibitive favorites to win the chip. Everybody's looking at Brooklyn and wondering whether it's Brooklyn or Philly or Milwaukee, who's going to be able to challenge you? Is Kawhi and Paul George going to be able to step up and challenge you and stuff like that? Yes, it's about the team, but it's also about you as an individual. So when he says, I never think about me, I'm only thinking about the team, that's a damn lie. There's no way you can be as great as him and you never have that intestinal fortitude and that individual pride to put your greatness on display. You don't spend $1.5 million on your physique, your body, your conditioning, and everything that comes with it to be as great as you can be just for the team to win a championship. No, you want to be the reason or primary reason why you win that championship. And I think that individual pride is incredibly admirable. Not only do I respect it, I revere it. And I look at guys like him. It could be anything. It could be you on the elliptical, bro. It could be me on the Peloton, the treadmill. It could be you anywhere, whatever. When you see these guys, And you hear what they go through in order to be in peak condition. Yeah. And then you in that gym and you sweating and all of that other, you're like, damn, how do they do it? You understand what I'm saying? And it makes you marvel at them even more. So he's lying, but I ain't knocking him for it. It's the right thing to say, and he always knows what right things to say and what right and what wrong things to avoid saying. But that's what it is.
Let me tell you what I saw from LeBron last night. And this has been going on all year. He has modified his game again in order to stay on top. And look, he's made three title defenses as best player in the world, and I talk about it. KD won the MVP right in LeBron's prime. I thought, oh, no one – and he deserved it. That was the difference. There were dudes who won the MVP in Jordan's prime because people were just tired of giving Jordan the award, but they were never better than Jordan. But I watched KD. I was like, you know what? He had a better year than LeBron. Maybe he's better than LeBron. Nope. Playoffs came around. Nope, he's not. Same thing happened with Steph. Same thing happened with Kawhi because LeBron was hurt. I got fooled at least a couple of those times. And then by the end, when the dust settled, LeBron was left standing. And he's done it by changing his game as he's gotten older. Miami, he was at his physical best, right? A brilliant offensive player, shooting the three, the whole thing, complete player, and a great intense defensive player all year. And as he got older in Cleveland, he realized, I can't play that level defense all the time and do what I do on the – he took his foot off the gas so he could win championships and compete in the playoffs. And now what I saw last couple of years, Stephen A., is AD challenging him to play defense, and he has. The Lakers are a top five efficiency defensive and offensive team. LeBron plays defense again. even in the regular season. And offensively, in order to do all that, he's shooting the three more often and better than ever before. He's shooting 6-7 threes a game, and he's hitting them 37, 38, maybe 40% of the time after last night. 39.6. He grinded up to 40. That's 40. 40% of the time shooting 6-7 threes a game. I mean, he's doing the thing Giannis hasn't been able to do yet. Giannis needs to shoot the three better, and he's incrementally getting better to his credit, but not good enough. Mm-hmm. LeBron is making the very adjustment that Giannis has to do, and he's doing it in order to be the best player in the world still. He sent that message again last night.
What I tried to educate you about, Max Kellerman, is that Giannis is never going to be able to make that adjustment. If you look at how he plays, see, LeBron has, even though LeBron is incredibly powerful, he's always had a finesse game because he's always been pretty much a perimeter player who's capable of using his physique, his muscles, et cetera, and really making things happen. But that's not his game. Giannis is entirely the opposite. Giannis is a dude, even though he was rail thin and he's put on 57 pounds of muscle, at least as of last year from the time he came into the league, the bottom line is he plays a power game. That's who he is. So him stepping out on the perimeter and making that adjustment is not as natural of a transition for him as it is for LeBron. LeBron is not a transition for LeBron. This is just a part
of one thing
he's learning how to shoot,
Giannis
but he's been on a wing.
Look,
that's not who Giannis is.
Giannis is a big. And my point, and he really is a big. He needs another guy as good as him, who's not a big, to succeed as almost every big ever needed. That's not LeBron. But Giannis is now shooting 5 threes a game, hitting him 31% of the time, which is the most he's ever shot it, and at the best clip. Mm-hmm. He's making the improvement incrementally that LeBron has already made. The fact is, the NBA needs an MVP award for the entire season. It's ridiculous to have regular season, finals, and nothing in between.
Max is wrong.
No, that you need an MVP for everything.
No. The regular season needs to be separate from the postseason because the regular season needs to matter to some degree when you're charging the paying customer to watch 82 games a year, or in this case, 72 for the season.
It does matter. You're seated in the playoffs.
I'm just saying, that's number one. Number two, and more importantly, just remember something. When you talk about Giannis, don't just look at the numbers. That's analytically speaking. You're looking at the number. Look at the actual game. Giannis, in the flow of a game, those shots don't come naturally to him. They come naturally
to him. He has to be more wide open than LeBron. He's not going to get it himself the same way. But because he's a big, he's not a perimeter player.
That's why I said there are limitations.
He's a very versatile big. He's not a wing.
Yes.
LeBron is now 6.
I'm glad you finally learned.
All right. He's 16-5, LeBron, career against Giannis, not close.
Yeah.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles on everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. Plus, receive premium travel benefits like access to over 1,300 airport lounges and a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. Unlock a whole new world of travel with a Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Breaking news this morning into First Take, and this one hurts. Hall of Famer and one-time home run king, Atlanta Braves legend, Henry Louis Aaron, Hank Aaron, has passed away this morning at the age of 86. As classy and as talented as they come.
Hank Aaron is the all-time leader in RBIs and total bases. He was the game's home run king for 33 years, and he played in 25 All-Star games. Yet, he was still underrated in part because he was not flashy. He hit 755 homers, but never 50 in a season. He was remarkably consistent, but he was overshadowed by more charismatic players in bigger markets.
If Hank had played in New York like Mantle and Mays, we all know it would have been a different story. He was stuck in Milwaukee. I know they were in the World Series in 57, 58. That put him in the spotlight. But other than that, it really wasn't until he was getting into that Ruth territory that the spotlight finally shone on him the way that it should have all along.
Born in the segregated Alabama, baseball was Aaron's way out. A star in the Negro Leagues, his 23-year major league career began with the Milwaukee Braves in 1954, but in 1966, the Braves moved to Atlanta, putting Aaron back in the Deep South, where he had worked so hard to escape.
Hank was returning to a different South, returning to a new South. And Atlanta is considered the capital of the new South.
The Civil Rights Movement had already shocked the New South. Here comes a face that's on their team, but still had that dignity. Don't mess with him, don't talk down to him.
In 1974, Aaron was on the cusp of breaking the home run record that had been held for 40 years by an American icon, Babe Ruth. Aaron received death threats and racially driven hate mail, up to 3,000 letters a day.
Hank, there's three things you can't give a nigga: a black eye, a puffed lip, or a jaw. Things like this really makes me push just that much harder. I really love it.
Hank saved all those hateful letters in a box in the attic. And at one point I said to Hank, there's no denying that that's true. But has that obscured for you the fact that millions and millions of Americans, not just black Americans, admired and respected you? His face softened and he said, I know that's true, but it still doesn't change what I had to go through.
For him to stay focused and hit 756 home runs, and I just don't understand it. I don't get it. You know, if a guy hit, you know, 300 or 400 home runs in the major league, he's like, you know, a god. What's higher than a god? Hank Aaron.
On April 8, 1974, Aaron hit his 715th home run, passing the Babe as the all-time home run king.
Here's the pitch by Downing. Swinging. There's a drive into left center field. That ball is going to be out of here. It's gone. It's 715. There's a new home run champion of all time, and it's Henry Aaron.
A record thought to be untouchable was broken by an African-American. As Aaron stood at home plate, with teammates and family surrounding him, with tears of relief in his eyes, he said,
I just thank God it's all over with. Thank you very much.
That poker face of Aaron shows the tremendous relief. What a marvelous moment for baseball. What a marvelous moment for the country and the world. A black man is getting a standing ovation in the Deep South for breaking a record of an all-time baseball idol.
Hank Aaron hit more home runs than Babe Ruth, drove in more runs than Lou Gehrig, scored more runs than Willie Mays, and had over 12 more miles in total bases than the runner-up, Stan Musial.
Aaron played two more seasons after breaking Ruth's record, then looked to cross another racial divide.
I'm looking forward to one day that a black will be able to run a professional ball club, and I'm hoping that that black will be me.
It would not consider him to be commissioner or a front office person. With the exception of Ted Turner's sensitivity in reaching out, Hank Aaron would be out of baseball, and that would be a sin.
Aaron accepted a front office job with the Braves in 1976 and worked for the club in several capacities for over 40 years. He will best be known as one of the greatest players of all time, but his lasting legacy will be the grace with which he carried himself through the breaking of Ruth's record and the dignity he showed when his record was surpassed, some say fraudulently, by Barry Bonds in 2007. Aaron was not just a Hall of Fame player, but a civil rights activist, a recipient of the Presidential Medal of Freedom, and a gentleman in every way.
The impact and resiliency of Hank Aaron is insurmountable. I have chills after seeing that piece, both on and off the field. Stephen Ale, I just want to say one thing, then I'll give it to you. Boxing legend Muhammad Ali once called Hank Aaron the only man I idolize more than myself. Your thoughts?
You know, moments like this are hard, and it comes with slight conflict from the standpoint that, you know, we mourn the passing of people from time to time, but I'm a Christian and I believe in God and I believe that there's a greater place than earth. And when you see what this man has endured, what he ultimately ended up accomplished, and then you hear he's 86 years of age, you don't look at him as being gone. He might be gone from us, but clearly never forgotten. And obviously in a better place because of what a wonderful human being he was. Stephen A. Smith is not sitting here today if it weren't for people like himself, Jackie Robinson, Bill Russell, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Jim Brown, Muhammad Ali, and some of the great, iconic African-Americans who not only excelled in the world of sports, but they extended their reach far beyond the field or the court of play for the betterment of us as a people. Hank Aaron hit 755 career home runs. And, you know, Tim Kirkjian, the great Tim Kirkjian, highlighted all the superlatives. And it was wonderful seeing Ralph Wiley, God rest his wonderful soul, a person that I truly idolized in this business. And I had the pleasure of knowing a little bit before he passed away several years ago. And to hear the deference and the reverence with which they speak about Hank Aaron just brings chills to you, because you hear about and you witness to some degree, whether it's through footage, letters he saved, etc., what he had to endure. And it's a reminder, particularly for people in today's generation. When they picked Jackie Robinson, it wasn't just because of his exploits. It's because of what he would have to endure and whether he had the temperament to fend all of those things off and still perform while making sure he didn't engage in retribution or reciprocal behavior towards the heinous acts that were exacted against him. With Hank Aaron, he talked about what he talked about, had it, what he had to endure, and you saw the pictures of
3,000 hate letters a day?
A day, and death threats and what have you. And you see that he was a civil rights activist. You recognize that he was pushing for management. We just had a conversation at the beginning of the show, y'all, where we talked about African-Americans being in head coaching positions. How do we applaud the Washington football team? Because for the first time, it's 2021, and a black man is the president of a football team in the National Football League, and another black man is about to be the general manager. These are the kind of things that Hank Aaron was speaking about, envisioning, and hoping for in the 70s. We just had protests a few months ago about what things have not been happening, what things have not been transpiring, and how Max so eloquently speaks to the systemic racism that continues to exist and ravage this nation as a whole. And so for me, I'm sad that he's gone. I'm incredibly happy that he's with God now in a better place. And I just, you know, I'm so thankful to him, because if it were not for people like him, there wouldn't be people like me. There wouldn't be people like LeBron. There wouldn't be people like Jordan. There wouldn't have been a lot of other people if it were not for the sacrifices he made and the things he was willing to endure while still performing at an elite level. What a true, true icon. What a true, true role model. He will be missed, but he will never be forgotten.
And talk about a life well lived, Max.
We take it for granted, yeah. I hope, that if a black man or a black person were to accomplish something big, societally speaking, they had to go through a lot of hate from the white powers that be. You even just brought up how long it took to have a black president in a front office. The American population did better electing a black man president not long ago, twice, than these owners do in the NFL in giving black men, like, right? In other words, the more entrenched in power the white person, or so it seems, the more black people are facing, right? It gets worse, not better.
Yeah.
So you can imagine what Hank Aaron had to go through in the 50s and 60s, mainly, is when he did this. And the kind of hate and backlash that they received, that a black person trying to achieve a great thing received, was, you would think, in proportion to the size of the accomplishment. Just so people understand out there, because the NFL and the NBA are such big deals now, Major League Baseball in the 1950s and 60s was the NFL and the NBA combined times something.
Yeah.
Its economy was so much bigger. It was the national pastime. Nothing competed with baseball during Hank Aaron's career. And the home run record was the number one record. More than the hits record, but the lifetime home, that Babe Ruth record, was the number one. He broke, by far, the number one record in the history of American sports till that time. A record I believe he still holds. Because his forehead didn't suddenly triple in size, mm-hmm. and then his home run to at-bat ratio double. He was the same dude for a quarter century. I'll tell you something else about Hank Aaron. Hank Aaron was not just the greatest home run hitter of lifetime. Mm-hmm. Hank Aaron was, you know, he led the league in hitting more than once in batting average, slugging percentage more than once. He was a great right fielder, had more than one gold glove. So he was an excellent base stealer, stole 30 bases in a season, better than a 3-to-1 ratio with over 240 stolen bases in his career. He was an all-around great player. Wiley's stat about this number two guy in total bases is Stan Musial, one of the all-time greats, really long career. He had more than 12 miles, 90 feet to each base, more total bases than the number two guy, Stan Musial. He was an incredibly great all-around baseball player. Mm-hmm. And as a black man, overcame the hate associated with claiming the number one prize in the history of American team sports. It throughout the 50s and on his way to do it in the early 70s, through the 50s and the 60s. That's an icon.
Yeah. He left Mobile, Alabama, 18 years old, $2, two sandwiches. The rest is history. I just want to say one thing about passing the record. He said, I don't want people to forget Babe Ruth. I just want them to remember me. Look, he's such a class
Real quick, last one. If Hank Aaron, this is how great he was, never hit a single home run,
yeah.
he'd be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Because if you took away every home run he hit, he had more than 3,000 hits as a gold glover. First ballot Hall of Famer with zero home runs, but he's the all-time champ.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Shopping for Mother's Day is always a challenge because you wait until the last minute. But Macy's Gift Finder makes it incredibly fast and easy to find the right gift just in time for Mother's Day, whether you're shopping for your sister's first Mother's Day or your fashionista mom who loves to make a statement. Macy's Gift Finder has so many great gift ideas that you can easily pick out something special to celebrate them both. You can shop by price, anywhere from $25 and under to $100 and under. You can also sort by categories like fragrance, handbags, and more. Or gift lists, like for the mom who has everything. Pre-wrapped gifts or gifts for grandma. Find top brands like Studio Pro Model Beats headphones, Polaroid cameras, Samsung smart TVs. So what are you waiting for? Mother's Day is May 12th, and it'll be here before you know it. Macy's has the perfect gift guide to make picking something for mom easy this year. Head to Macy's.com/giftfinder today. That's Macy's.com/giftfinder. Thanks so much for listening to the pod, and have a fabulous day. Breaking news this morning into First Take. Hall of Famer, one-time home run king, Atlanta Braves legend Hank Aaron has passed away this morning at the age of 86. For more on this, we bring in our very own Tim Kirkjian. And Tim, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We just played that piece you put together, and it gave me chills. And I know you come to us this morning with heavy hearts, obviously covered him for a very long time. I want to ask you this. You know, I'm in my 30s. For our even younger audience, can you put into context just how revered he was in this game?
Well, I have a million stories about that. But in 2014, Aaron Boone, who grew up in a baseball family, his dad was a big leaguer, his grandfather was a big leaguer. Aaron grew up at major league ballparks. He can talk to anybody about anything. And during that All-Star game, he went into an elevator and stood next to Hank Aaron. And Aaron Boone couldn't even speak to Hank Aaron. I said, why? And Aaron looked at me and he goes, because it's Hank Aaron. That's how revered he was. He was so in awe of Aaron, the player and the man, he couldn't even find the words to say hello. And the same thing happened to Craig Counsell of the Brewers. He was working in the Brewers front office a few years ago when Aaron called him out of the audience at a get-together and wanted him to speak about how Counsell, a Milwaukee kid, had somehow made it to the major leagues. And Counsell remembers thinking to himself, I can't go up there and talk because that's Hank Aaron. And then Hank Aaron started asking him questions, and Counsell told me, I cannot believe this is happening to me. Hank Aaron is asking me questions about baseball. That's how revered he was around the game. And the highlight of my entire career, 41 years of covering baseball, was several years ago, Hank Aaron came into the booth and sat next to Dave Fleming, Eduardo Perez, and myself for four innings. It was unbelievable how kind and gentle he was. It was unbelievable his recall of all the games that he and others had played. It was the warmest, funniest night I've ever spent in a major league ballpark. And after the game, I looked on Twitter, which I don't do very often, and some guy wrote in and said, if you find anyone in your life who looks at you like Tim Kirkchin looked at Hank Aaron, you should marry that person. That's how revered Hank Aaron was for me and for everyone that he ran into.
Tim Kirkchin, I mean, just looking at your piece and what you put together about Hank Aaron, you obviously highlighted what he had to endure. What I marvel at is the fact that he was able to withstand it, to overcome it, to excel in spite of it all. I wonder how much, if anything at all, did he hold on to all of those years because of what he endured and had to experience while he was ascending in Major League Baseball, and if he ever shared anything with you that stood with you to this day about what he had to endure and how it made him truly feel.
Well, he told us that night on the air just how difficult it was. But instead of saying, woe is me, look what I had to go through, instead, he acknowledged just how much stronger it made him. He's one of the strongest men that we've ever met, not in a physical sense, but in a mental and an emotional sense. And I think the passing of Hank Aaron that night was all that he needed to move on to the next stage. As you guys know, Tom House, former pitcher, caught number 715 in the left center field bullpen. And when he ran the ball into home plate and handed it to Hank Aaron, Hank Aaron was in tears. And Tom House said, I'd never seen Hank Aaron cry before. That's how emotional it was. But from that moment on, he was able to forget, for the most part, the hatred and the racism that he faced. And for him to not constantly bring that up to people just shows you what an amazing man he was.
Tim, it occurs to me when you talked about how he's underrated, how underrated, just as a baseball player, it's hard enough for young people to get their minds around how big baseball was then. It was bigger than the NFL and NBA combined. Its economy was huge. It took up a huge part of the public imagination. There were fewer entertainment options. And when you talk about what a great player he was, and you said he was overshadowed by more dynamic players, the one who comes to mind, of course, is Willie Mays, who came up a few years before Hank Aaron, who probably a lot of people wanted to be the guy who broke the home run record, who was a little more spectacular and played center field. And all Hank Aaron did was not just hitting home runs, but being a great player year after year after year. Ultimately, what do you think his legacy is?
Well, he's certainly one of the greatest players of all time. And Max, you've already given the key note here. You take away all his home runs and he still has 3,000 hits. That's how great a hitter he was. And many years ago, I did a very informal poll of the greatest defensive players at each position. And Hank Aaron, in my very informal poll, but I talked to a lot of people, had Hank Aaron as the third greatest defensive right fielder ever. He could run the bases. He was a great outfielder. He didn't just hit for power. He hit for average. He hit when it was really needed. Ask anyone who saw the Milwaukee Braves, especially back then. That's who Hank Aaron was. For all of his greatness, we still underrate him because he never hit 50 home runs in a season. He, of course, has the most homers ever for anyone who never hit 50, but he hit 40 like every year. He was just so amazingly reliable with everything that he did on the baseball field. And as you know, Stephen A. and Max and Molly, he had the biggest, strongest hands and wrists that you've ever seen. So I asked him on the broadcast that night, I said, where did that come from? And he said, well, first off, my dad was a boxer, so he had big hands and wrists. And he said, and he used to carry blocks of ice up many stairs in order to bring it and deliver it to people. And he said, that's where I developed my hand strength. I'd go with my dad holding these giant blocks of ice in these ice tongs. He said, that's where my really big and hard wrists came from. That's a classic story from Hank Aaron, who never boasted about anything unless you asked him.
Tim Kirkchen, obviously, you know, when we think about what baseball has had to endure over the last couple of decades, clearly the steroids era was one of those eras that a lot of us would like to forget. We know how it ravaged the sport to some degree. Clearly, he had nothing to do with such a thing. I'm wondering for you, I'm wondering for former Commissioner Bud Selig and others, even though there was a fixation on covering that particular story, how much the love and adulation and respect for what Hank Aaron accomplished in his career, how much did that have to do with everyone's zest to protect the home run record, to make sure that he was recognized as the home run king, to make sure that you just basically uplifted the sport of baseball because he was the home run king? How much did that play a role in the willingness and the zest to protect the sport to the degree that so many felt so willing to do?
Well, that had so much to do with it, Stephen A. We know how much baseball reveres its career statistics, but when the statistics are run up by a man who played with the dignity and the grace and the courage that Hank Aaron did, it makes it even more protective. So for all of those who want to make Barry Bonds the all-time home run hitter, he is in the record book, and I'm frankly okay with that. It's just a line in a record book. I think the whole steroid era and the passing of Hank Aaron allowed us to examine again what a great player he was and what a great man he was. So it's terrible what happened. It's terrible that the record book got turned upside down, but it allowed us to remember again how great Hank Aaron was in his prime. Because from all indications, every thing that he did by himself. And that's really saying something.
You brought up what a clutch player he was. I just looked it up, and I know a lot of baseball stats in my head. I didn't know this. Hank Aaron, in his postseason career, which he played in two World Series and an NLCS, so it's a significant sample size, 74 plate appearances, hit .362 and slugged .710. Like, Tim, of all the many things I grew up knowing about Hank Aaron, because he retired basically a year after I was born, I never heard people talk about his kind of clutch ability. But apparently, he had it. You talked about how he came through when the team needed him to. Was that him by reputation as a player?
Well, absolutely. Max, he was great at all times. He was great as soon as he came up. He was great in the biggest games ever. And until Barry Bonds came along, Hank Aaron hit more home runs after age 35 than any player in Major League history. And the amazing part about him is where his career began. You kind of mentioned how he got on a bus he told us, I had no money in my pockets. That's how he went to pro ball. He also told us that night that he was going to be a switch hitter And it wasn't until he got to the minor leagues that they said, no, we just want you to bat right-handed. He said, there was every chance I was going to be a switch hitter. That's how good he was from the left side. And you also remember he hit cross-handed when he first came up. His hands were in the wrong position, but his hands were so strong. His wrists were so strong, he was still able to be a productive hitter. It wasn't until he got to pro ball that he got turned around to this way. That was the beauty of Hank Aaron. It wasn't a smooth beginning for him, but his talent as a young player in the clutch and as an older player overwhelmed everything. That's who Hank Aaron was.
Tim Kirkjian, educate me about something here, sir. Everything that you, myself, Max Kellerman have highlighted about Hank Aaron, Hall of Famer, of course, received 97.8% of the votes. That is, what is it, 406 out of 415 ballots, if I remember correctly. My question is, we would use this. That 2.2% who were maybe nine voters, who were these people? Did you guys ever highlight them? And what was their possibly, what possible excuse could they have for not voting Hank Aaron into the Hall of Fame?
Look, don't start me on this, Stephen A. It's too shameful to even talk about. That should have been a unanimous first ballot Hall of Famer, Hank Aaron. Willie Mays was not unanimous. Ted Williams, 20 voters didn't vote for Ted Williams his first year eligible. I can't understand it. The votes, of course, were not made public back then, but it's just unconscionable to me how Hank Aaron could come up on a Hall of Fame ballot and someone didn't vote for him. There is absolutely no excuse. And if it's a racism thing only and anyone found out about that, that guy's got to go immediately, because that is unnecessary and unconscionable how you could not vote for Henry Aaron on the first ballot.
Tim, I'm trying to think in the history of American team sports, at the moment at which a record was set or broken, I would have to think that 715 and then ultimately 755 was number one by far, because it's the home run record. Baseball was bigger than any sport as relative to other sports of its day. It's a career accomplishment. It's not just one season. Is there any rival even to, at the moment when Hank Aaron hit 715 in the history of American team sports, a bigger moment in terms of breaking a record?
Well, the Bill Mazeroski homer could be the biggest home run in baseball history, because it came in Game 7 of the World Series and beat the Yankees. However, in the grand scheme of things, I don't think there's any question that number 715 is the biggest home run of all time when it comes to individual and legendary and historic. Just because Babe Ruth, no matter what anyone else wants to say, was the greatest player of all time, legendary beyond words. And for Hank Aaron to pass him, that almost by definition makes it the biggest home run ever hit. And just to show you how gracious Hank Aaron was, many years after that, he did a radio interview on the field in Texas, and the poor radio guy got a little bit confused and said, Hank, I want to ask you first about that historic number 755 home run that you hit. And Hank said, well, most people want to talk about number 715, but I'll tell you about 755 if you want to know. That's just how he was with people of all kinds, and that's why he was so legendary in so many ways. He was, cliched as it sounds, a better guy than he was a baseball player, and he's a top five player of all time.
Tim Kirkjian, thank you so, so much for being with us. Appreciate all that context and the stories. And I know you have a heavy heart this morning. So thank you so much for the time. We will talk to you soon. Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day. Breaking news, and this one hurts. Hall of Famer, one-time home run king, Atlanta Braves legend Hank Aaron has passed away this morning at the age of 86. I mentioned this earlier. Boxing legend Muhammad Ali once called Hank Aaron the only man I idolize more than myself. We continue to remember the legend, and we bring in senior writer for ESPN, Howard Bryant. Howard, thank you so much for being with us on short notice, and I'm so grateful to have you because you have such a unique perspective. Having wrote the book, The Last Hero, A Life of Henry, can you talk to me about what it was like working on the book with him and how you met him?
Yeah, well, thank you for this. It's a very it's a devastating day, obviously, and I remember back in 2005, 2006, when I first wanted to work on this project, and it took forever to try to get Henry to even reach him because his camp was so convinced that the only reason people wanted to talk to him was to compare him to Barry Bonds because his record was in jeopardy of being broken. And I finally got a chance to call him, and it was on Jackie Robinson's birthday. It was January 31st, 2006, and We talked, and he said to me, "I don't understand why you're calling. Nobody cares about me. No one is in. Why would anybody be interested in me?" And I said, "Because you're Henry Aaron." And it was so fascinating because where he was at that point was he was very aware of his accomplishments, and he was very clear about his accomplishments, but he had been convinced in a lot of ways that this culture didn't have any interest in decency and didn't have any interest in sort of the, you know, his journey. And it was, I the thing I love most about Henry was that he was so aware. He was absolutely he really enjoyed the fact that people did finally respect him and that people did reach him after all he went through in 1974, that the country had reached him and that caught up to his values. And he got to enjoy it. And people always thought he was bitter. He wasn't. He got to enjoy this, and he really, really loved the fact that he got to spend the last quarter century just being a total legend to a new generation.
Howard, how were you ultimately able to convince him people would appreciate the story that you had to tell about him? How were you able to convince him of that?
Well, we were on the phone for about an hour, and I remember the thing that kind of did it was I said to him, "Well, people aren't interested in you because of Barry Bonds. People are interested in you. Period. You're Henry Aaron. And I was sort of amazed that he was so reticent about it. But I think finally, what did it was I got to meet him for the first time in New York at a signing, and we sat down, and for the entire conversation, all we talked about was Mobile and Atlanta and Milwaukee. And he told me this phenomenal story about how much he didn't want to go to Atlanta because of how, you know, he didn't want to go back to the Deep South. And then he sat down with Ralph Abernathy and Dr. King and Andrew Young, and they told him, "You're as important to this movement and to Black people as we are, and we need you. We need you to come here." And that conversation, all talking about that, he sort of sat back and he said, "Ask whatever question you need." It was almost as if his memory reminded him of, "Yeah, I have a part in this American story."
Was he aware at all, Howard, of kind of how he represented? It's almost like a politician pre-Watergate or something, a home run champion pre-steroids era, how he what he represented, not just obviously as an African-American who toppled the, I think at the moment he did it, the single most significant record in the history of American team sports, I think by far, actually, But the fact that he did it, that he eventually came to represent a kind of more innocent time, like before the level of cheating that we saw years later, was he aware of that at all?
Yeah, and I think that's why the title of the book is The Last Hero. That was the last record that to that point in baseball that I felt was really untainted by drugs, that this was the big one. And once this one stopped, people were going to have to look at him very differently. And the fact that I think he wanted to stay away from all of that because he felt like it was a lose-lose situation. He always felt like if I come out and complain about, you know, drugs and sports, then people are going to look at me as if I'm this old man with sour grapes. And if I say nothing, people think that I'm tacitly condoning what's happening to the sport. So it's a lose-lose situation for me. But what ended up happening was he actually grew even stronger in the minds of people because of what we remember about our own nostalgia and our own sort of innocence, whether it's accurate or not.
What did he say to you about how exactly he felt about the whole steroids era?
He's completely offended by it. I think that he never wanted to be in that situation of having to compare and having to talk about it, because he always thought that it was a lose-lose for him. But he was offended by it. He was offended really by two things. One was the drugs. And the other was the fact of where the country was going. I talked to him 2.5 weeks ago. We were talking about working on another project together. We've been working on a project together. And one of the things that he was really happy about was he was happy that he survived the last 4 years. Because he talked about, he used to tell me stories about how when he was little and the Ku Klux Klan would come down the street in Mobile, his parents used to throw him and the kids under the bed. And he used to talk about not wanting to feel like the country was going backwards. And it was amazing that whenever we talked about things, we talked about where the country was going as much as sports and everything else. And I was always fascinated by his ability to talk about these things and not be bitter when he had every right to be bitter. He was just, I just really love the fact if we all get to be 86 years old, get to live at a place in peace. He was at peace with where he was and where the world was. And that, to me, is a gift.
Howard, the dignity that he lived with, when you talk about that story, hiding under his bed from the KKK, leaving Mobile, Alabama with two sandwiches, and now passing away as the home run king and a hero. Thank you so, so much for being with us. And obviously, everyone can check out your book to hear more intimate stories. Howard, thank you. That'll do it for us here on First Take as well. Stephen A., Max, any final?
I think everybody said it best. When you consider what Howard Bryant just said, what Tim Kirkjian just highlighted, what both Max and I had to say, it says it all. I mean, this is a man that we revere, we respect, we admire. He's an iconic figure. We're going to miss him greatly. Mm-hmm.
It's hard to explain how big a deal he was to young people, but we tried, and his passing is very sad.
Even a greater humanitarian than baseball player, which is hard to believe. Goodbye, everyone. See you Monday.